Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster: wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, happy Tuesday to you, everybody. It's Sports Daily here on KFH. Tommy Kester along with Jacob Albrecht today. Glad to have you joining us along for the ride today. Jacob, good morning to you, my friend.
How are you, Tommy? We are ready to rock and roll on this Tuesday. Glad to be here. We've got you covered. A lot of good stuff to get to today. The Royals bullpen lets them down again. Right as we go off the air yesterday, we get our coaches poll, our preseason coaches poll, which is of intrigue to us in this part of the world. Both Kansas schools at the D1 level represented in that poll. We'll get into that a little bit. Harrison Butker gets a big raise. That's a complex story that we'll dig into as well. A lot of good stuff to make our way through on this day. The IHOP hotline will be open for you the whole way. 869-1240 is the number. It's brought to you by IHOP. Excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th. We'll have a giveaway today. We'll give away a little HTO, iced tea, and free rain coffee. So stay tuned for your opportunity to win that as well. Taking your calls, taking your comments on all our different video streams. You can find us on X, on YouTube, on Facebook. You can leave us your comments right there on the streams. We see those. We'll put those on the air if they're relevant and they're nice. We'll get those out on the air. We'll talk about those. And you can also, of course, listen to us, call us the old-fashioned way. Thanks to those listening to us on the Odyssey app. And thanks for those watching, by the way, on 12 News Connected. Excited for that partnership to carry us right into football season this fall. Really looking forward to that. I got some fun stuff coming this week for you. Expecting to chat with Grady Dick, Wichita's own NBA player. That'll be tomorrow in the second hour. We'll have, of course, Tim Fitzgerald on later this week. We will talk a little high school football, high school sports later this week with TJ Cleland, the Catchy Awards. Speaking of that partnership with 12 News Connected, those big awards from last season, sort of the official end of last season and transition into the new season, we'll get with him. That voting is complete and get a little preview of that with him later this week as well. Lots of good stuff coming for you. Glad you're here. Tommy, the Royals last night. We're all fired up for the game. We're all fired up for the series. It was off to a great start. And then things unrolled on him once the bullpen got out there, I thought, again. And they didn't get to the part of the game where we really wanted to see it, which was, you know, with the lead, Brady Singer went 5 2/3, couldn't quite get out of that, you know, fifth inning. Zerpa comes in. Zerpa was really bad, maybe his worst performance of the year. Let it get away from him, which was too bad because the offense kind of kept chipping away at it. But Stratton had a shaky couple of innings. MacArthur was clean, which was nice to see. But it was, you know, the bullpen letting him down yet again. It's interesting because it's very frustrating when your losses recently are all coming because of, you know, basically the bullpen not being able to do its job. But at the same time, if you're going to lose games, I guess that's the best way to lose games, right? When your starting pitching is still consistent, your offense is, you know, I thought the offense was okay yesterday, 5 runs, and they kind of stuck with it and kept chipping away. But it is something that we're going to have to continue to watch down the stretch here. They have got to be able to find 3 or 4 guys with the lead that they can count on. Really, you know, you want them to maintain that, but what you can't have is what happened to Zerpa yesterday. You can't have that kind of meltdown in a game. You know, if he comes in and gives up the lead, that's one thing. But to come in and just totally melt down two in the next inning, that's where it gets like you're not giving your team a chance at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things really stand out to me. Number one, you know, Brady Singer was in there slightly too long, you know, and I think that in retrospect, you know, I think that if Cutrero had that back, he might have been able to, I think he would have maybe tried to make a change a little bit sooner with Singer than what he did. Because you could tell, I mean, you could tell, especially going into the sixth inning, that it wasn't just quite as sharp as we had seen earlier in the game. I know he gave up a couple of runs earlier in the ballgame. You know, but that's always a shoulda, woulda, coulda, right? Like that's you want to hang with the guy that has pitched pretty well from start to that point, but they needed to go to the pen. Zerpa had been, I think we talked about it yesterday, has been pretty reliable for most of the season. He did not have it last night. It didn't work for him. I think one of the big mistakes that was made with Zerpa's usage last night is they needed somebody to come in and finish the sixth and take the ball out of Brady Singer's hands. Then I would have gone with another reliever to start off the seventh. I'm not sure I would have brought Zerpa back out there.
After he gave up that hit? Or
Yeah. Like I'm just not sure.
That's been Zerpa's role sort of this season, is to do that, what he did. Yeah. I mean, him and Long seem to be the guys that they'll do that with.
Yeah, I'm just not sure that was the time, you know, or the place for Zerpa. Because, I mean, again, like, you know, in retrospect, he did not have his stuff. And so you end up, you go from having a tie ball game to all of a sudden you're down several runs just in the blink of an eye. And then they basically are playing from behind, you know, the rest of the game. You mentioned James MacArthur had a clean ninth. You know, it's easier to have a clean ninth when you're down.
He's got to pitch at some point. Yeah, he's got to work
four runs. You know, so it's a little bit, and that's fine. I think that there's part of like working through. I'm an advocate that he probably should go down to AAA for a while to try to work through his mechanics and all of that. But you know, if you're in a position where you're down several runs and it's really a low risk situation for MacArthur, you know, then that was okay. That was a fine time to trot him out there. He did have a clean ninth, but yeah, overall, I mean, the bullpen has got to try to figure out a way to stabilize itself a little bit, because that's been, when you look recently over the last week or two, more often than not, that's been the reason why when the Royals have losses, that's why they have a loss in the loss column, is the bullpen not being able to get it done. I know it's been highly situational for the bullpen for the Royals, like depending on the situation, that's when we see certain relievers. I don't know if you need to, if Cutrero needs to think about, okay, we should have like set roles for these guys so they know what to expect, you know, night in and night out. I'm not sure it's as simple as that, but you know, this situational thing has come back to bite them, I think, in a few different situations recently, especially last night.
Couple of things on that. I disagree. I would have stuck with Brady Singer where they did because of what we've seen out of that part of the bullpen lately. So I didn't have any issue with that. But another thing that was interesting to me, and as we wonder how this will shape up, you know, when the bullpen tries to take over in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, is that they didn't use Chris Bubich there. Now, we know Bubich is capable, as he's been a starter most of his career, of giving you longer outings, certainly. He's also been really, really, really good in just in general. I thought it was interesting. And look, I if you would have asked me if Singer had traffic in the, you know, in the sixth inning, who would they go get to? I would have guessed it would have been Zerpa. I mean, I think that's what he's done. But I think they had an opportunity to use Bubich there because it's in his repertoire and he's been so good, and they didn't. What does that mean? I think it probably means they're looking at him potentially as a high leverage guy late in a game now, which I think is the right thing to do just based on how much success he's had. So I thought that was interesting. I would have absolutely tried to let Singer work through that. It was, oh, who was it? Hamilton. I don't remember which Red Sox it was. Got so many young players now that just kind of threw their bat out and had that little flare single, you know, that got the traffic sort of going. And I'm like, that's a cheap hit, right? Like they're not on Singer so much. So I was fine with it. I thought Singer looked okay. I thought he was battling, and I just trust him more. I mean, that's the thing for me. Like when it comes down to, and this isn't a good thing necessarily, but when we're in that situation and you're watching and you're like, okay, what are they going to do? I just trust the starters more than I do the relievers at this point. I mean, other than Ursig and Bubich, they've all kind of been shaky. Will Smith hasn't been lately. We haven't given him his appropriate flowers, and maybe he needs to be working his way back in because he's been nails for like a month and a half now. But I trust the starters far more than I trust the relievers in totality. So if there is an opportunity and it's not obvious, I'm always okay leaning to the starter.
In totality, yes, and I agree with you. In totality, we've known this all season long that the rotation is better than the bullpen. The starters are better than the relievers. Even with the acquisitions that the Royals made at the trade deadline, that's still the case. But I think when you look at just this particular game last night, I mean, Brady Singer allowed a lot of traffic. I mean, he gave up 10 hits in 5 2/3. You know, he only walked one, so that was good. But there was a lot of traffic on the base paths for the Red Sox. Now, to Singer's credit, he was able to work his way out of those situations for the most part in the game before he got into trouble in the sixth. But I don't know. I think that when, you know, if you're just looking at that one game, even though Singer was able to work his way out of situations like that, he wasn't immune to having base runners, and eventually that was going to come back and bite him, and it did in the sixth inning. So I think just if you look at it holistically, yeah, like I'm going to always want to try to let the Royal starters pitch, if I can, above the relievers. But in this one specific game,
yeah, I get it.
You could tell. I mean, there was a lot of traffic on the base paths. There were a lot of like really sticky situations.
Best.
It wasn't. There were a lot of sticky situations that Singer got into. And so if it's me, it's like, okay, it's not his night. He's pitching okay, but let's see. And, you know, to your point, Zerpa had been really reliable. And so you kind of come to expect that he's going to be able to, you know, come into the game and shut things down. He didn't have it last night either.
In a perfect world, you hand that off to your, you know, whoever you've identified as your seventh inning guy to get you an extra out in a perfect world. They don't have a perfect world right now, so they're going to have to work through it. Again, it's frustrating. There is nothing more frustrating in baseball than a bad bullpen. However, of all the things that could be going wrong in big picture, it's okay. Like, it's all right for the Royals. Now, you happen to be playing the Red Sox, that you gave up a game in the wild card standings. You don't want to do that. In these series head-to-head, the big thing is you make sure you don't get swept. Now, you definitely want to win 2 out of 3 if you're the Royals. There's no question about that. The Astros lost last night. The Rangers did the Royals a favor, so that's good news, but you just keep watching it. And now you get your two big guns the next couple of nights, and we'll talk more about those games. We have a lot on the radar today to get to on the program. We've got the coaches poll that I want to spend some time with. That came right after we left the air. This Butker deal, I want to spend some time with. There's about a billion different reasons why that's really, really interesting from a football perspective, all the off the field stuff. We'll get into all of that with Harrison Butker as well. And we'll just kind of make our way through this busy Tuesday here. Again, your calls welcome on the IHOP hotline at 869-1240. That is the IHOP hotline. We want to say thanks real quick to Prairie Fire Coffee for always fueling us up here at KFH. Tommy's got his cup. That's how we survive there in the studios. Lots of coffee in the early morning hours. So we appreciate them. We're going to come back. Let's get into this college football coaches poll. A little history for KU. Both K-State and KU are in there. It's crowded at the top from the SEC and the Big Ten. We'll get into all of it Let's go. It's football season. Here we go. That's what we'll hit next on Sports Daily. All Brockton Caster. Don't go away.
And 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here. Glad to be here with you on this Tuesday edition. We talk a little Royals there. We can always go back to the Royals. You can leave us your comments on our video stream. You can also call us on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. All that baseball talk, by the way, presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. All right, Tommy, let's dive into this. It came down too late for us to talk about it yesterday, but the coaches' poll is out. Of most note, obviously, K-State in at number 17, and we've got Kansas in at number 24. First time since 2008 that the Jayhawks have been in this poll. We wondered if they would get there. You know, we knew that they were catching some love. We wondered if they would get this kind of love. It is significant. I know it's a poll. I know polls don't mean anything. I am a believer in polls. I think it's very important to us as fans to have some attempt at a baseline of what to expect in a season. Now, is too much emphasis put on it by the end of the year? I don't know if that still happens with the CFP, but I like polls. I need polls, especially going into a season, especially now with the transfer portal and all these things. I'd like to have a gauge of what people are thinking about these teams nationally. It enhances our viewing experience early in a season. It's just a good thing. It's a good thing. Can be bulletin board material. Nothing to complain about, though, this year for K-State and KU. It feels about right to me, Tommy, for both of these schools. Should the Big 12 be, you know, up higher in the poll? There are five teams in the top 25. I feel like it's a pretty good poll for the Big 12, and I feel like it's a good poll for K-State and KU.
Yeah, I think overall, you know, I don't pay quite as much attention to the coaches' poll as I would the media poll, you know, just because I feel like the coaches' poll, like, you're not going to be paying a ton of attention to other teams, right? Like, you're paying attention to your team, and you're kind of guessing on what you think the other teams in your conference and around the country will do. So I don't put a ton of stock into the coaches' poll. When the preseason media poll comes out, that's the one that I'm going to pay closer attention to. And there's going to be a lot of similarities. I mean, I think you can look at what the coaches think and get a pretty decent idea that the media poll will be somewhat similar to that. But yeah, I mean, for K-State and KU, I get it. I'm fine overall with, you know, both places for those teams. I think the only thing that I was kind of surprised about with Kansas State is I thought they might be a little bit higher. Like, I would have put them around 15. Now they're at 17, so it's not that far off. That's about the only thing that I kind of thought, okay, well, I maybe would have put the Wildcats, you know, a little bit higher. Utah is at 13. And I think that between Utah and Kansas State, I mean, those two teams, you know, more, I think that there's obviously going to be several teams that are going to be in the mix, you know, when it comes to the Big 12 and who's going to win that conference.
It mimics the media poll that we saw in the Big 12.
But I do think that Utah and Kansas State maybe needed to be a little bit closer together in this coaches poll. I mean, they're five spots apart. So it is what it is. I would have put Kansas State a little bit higher. I'm okay with where Utah ended up, though. I probably would have done Utah 13, Kansas State 15. But other than that, yeah, I don't really have much of an issue with the poll.
Here's what I'm going to be perfectly honest with the masses about. Most of these teams, I don't yet know anything about, right? Like, I have followed, you know, Kansas and Kansas State through the offseason. I have tried to follow the Big 12 as a whole through the offseason. I have not followed anybody else through the offseason other than headline-y type stuff. So, like, if you're asking me to give my thoughts on, you know, Penn State getting in there at 9, like, I have no idea. LSU at 12. I know they lost a bunch of players. I don't know what they've done. You know, Clemson at 14 surprised me a little bit, I think, but I don't know what they've done, right? Like, and so it gets, that's what I mean. That's why I like these polls. That's why I like to see it, to get a feel for it. I'm not going to hot take you and say it's ridiculous that 8 out of the top 10 teams are SEC and Big 10 teams. I have no idea if that's good or that's bad. I don't know. I mean, if you're the Big 12, holistically, you can say, let's show them how much, you know, how good we are. problem for the Big 12 is they're going to beat up on each other this year. You know, I don't know that an end of season top 25 would look all that different, quite frankly. We've seen these types of years for the Big 12 where it's a lot of teams kind of tossed into the middle and back into that top 25, and that's okay. All that matters is the CFP, and here's why the CFP is going to change how we consume all of this. This matters a little bit less than it ever has before, right? Not in the things I said I liked about it. I still love that it gives us a baseline when we're watching games as a national audience, right? I'd like to know who people think are the good teams so I can know the magnitude of any certain game. Now, they could be wrong, obviously. They could be wrong about teams. They're wrong about teams in the preseason all the time. But that's okay. It still gives us something to look at. But the good thing about the way this is all changing is when you see that and you see the Big 12 and what you see in that poll is what the reality most think is in the preseason is that there's not an elite team, right? But there's a lot of really good teams and they're going to beat up on each other. I think this poll is very representative of that. The good news is in the old days, that kills your chances to win a national championship right out of the gates. You know that, right? Is any team coming out of this league with two losses or less?
Yeah, I doubt that. I doubt that. And okay. Here, the other thing too is that I've always wondered this. I mean, going all the way back
out the window.
I've always wondered this going back in the day. Is it better and more advantageous to be a team at the top of the poll at the beginning of the season? And your goal then is to try to stay there to get one of the few spots that used to be available to play for a national championship? Or is it more advantageous for a team to not be at the top and try to work their way up? And that's always been really intriguing to me. When there were two spots or when there were four spots. Because,
yeah, you know,
is it better to be the hunter or the hunted? You know, and I think that really the big thing that I always come back to, and I do agree with you, because if you're at the very top, then you control your own destiny and that's it. Like, you just have to win. If you are below and you're trying to work your way up, then you need help from other teams to lose. So I do understand that. But to your point, now that there are 12 spots in the playoff, it's not that I don't care as much about these polls. It's just that, like, it's less impactful for especially the teams who are outside of that top four. And I know that, you know, for a long time, teams really, they needed to know where they were going to be at the very beginning of the season, because you set a baseline, but it gives them an idea on what they've got to accomplish to try to get into that playoff picture. You've opened the door now for a lot more teams to be able to compete for that. And so it's less impactful. It's more, I think, just interesting than anything else. It doesn't mean nearly as much as it used to.
No, it doesn't, because we have the CFP rankings. These rankings, as far as who makes it in, don't mean anything now in the course of a season, whether it's AP top 25 coaches.
I mean, I'm sure, like, even when you were down, like, when you were picking the four,
I agree.
It influences it. So
I agree. And that's why I would always say you want to start at the top, because perception is everything. If you're, if you're Georgia this year, and let's say you stumble twice over the course of the season, but you storm back and finish with two losses and are going into, let's call it, an SEC championship game. Back in the old days of a four-team playoff, you knew you were probably still going to be able to get in, right? So it mattered to have that early hype. That's what we saw kind of out of Alabama last year, right? That, you know, you get that early hype and then you work back to it and it's like, see, I told you they were really good. And then that, and versus, you know, let's say you're just outside. Let's say you're Kansas or Kansas State last year. You're battling all the way through toward the end of the season. Maybe you have one loss going into that game and then you lose a second. The perception's totally different of how good you are. Like, see, I told you so. They're not that good. And so, yeah, I do think it still impacts things a little bit, but the beauty of the 12 team is you can sort of throw all that out the window. We think, now we'll see. And obviously when you get down to the 12th team, the, you know, 13th and 14th teams, the teams that just missed, will have the same conversations, but we know in college football, there aren't usually that many teams that could actually make it through a CFP format. There still may not be more than two, which is what we usually have, but it will be a whole lot more fun getting there. And when you see this out of the Big 12 now, I look at this and see five teams in the top 25. All I care about in this first year of the CFP 12 team, it, not being a fan, like from a, you know, from what we do, we obviously want to see K-State or KU or both in there. That would be our goal for the season, right? But just in general terms, as a college football, you know, advocate and viewer, what I would want to see is all four of the now Power Four leagues get at least two teams in. That would be like my personal goal for this new system would be for eight of the 12 teams to be two, at least two, right, of each of the four leagues. So the Big 12 gets two, the ACC gets two, and then the Big 10 and the SEC can have whatever. We know we're going to get one non-Power Four team in there. So that's nine teams. So that's probably a stretch and probably not going to happen to think that, you know, you'd only have five combined representatives of the SEC and the Big Ten. I would say the chances of that are slim to none. So who misses out then on that second berth? And that's what, you know, that's sort of what you get into with this 12 team now. And as it takes shape and where that power brokering is, because there's a lot of money involved in how many teams you're going to get into that thing is in a 12 team. When we see a top 25 like this, with five teams in from the Big 12, but all of them 13 or lower, what are the chances they can get two teams in? We know they're going to get one, but what are the chances they can get two in? And that's sort of what I think we focus on now as we look at the season from the Big 12 perspective.
It really becomes the question of the teams in the Big 12 beating up on each other. Will there be one or two teams that can separate themselves from everybody else? Or are you going to see four or five teams? In the preseason Big 12 poll alluded to this, that there's sure. not any kind of clarity among the top four or five teams in the conference, that there's no clear-cut favorite. There's no clear-cut two favorites. Like, there are four or five. And so if you end up with a really muddled mess, then it's probably going to be the Big 12 champion, and that's it in the top 12. I hope that's not the case. You want to see maybe one other team be the cream of the crop and rise above and be able to, you know, at least have that second Big 12 program make it into the 12-team playoff. But I think that because of knowing the new schools that are coming into the conference, and of course Utah and Arizona are going to be the class of those, you know, new schools coming in, both of those teams are in the preseason top 25. You add in KU, K-State, Oklahoma State. Those are probably the five favorites. It's going to be really hard for them to avoid a muddled up mess when things come down to it in December.
And then you get into the other interesting things, like what is Colorado's upside? We know what their downside is. What is their upside?
I'm just saying,
win individual games, to mess things up a little bit. UCF apparently has a really good quarterback. Then you get into the middle of the league. We know TCU has been effective with portal teams. Like, can they be a surprise here? What I'm saying is it's not just that the top end through those five is a mess in the Big 12. It's a mess like 1 through 10. I mean, the mess is deep. It's a deep mess. I think we forget Texas Tech is all sorts of hyped up for this football season. West Virginia and Iowa State, we thought were going to be bad last year. They both finished the year really strong. And so, like, it's not just at the very top where it's going to be a mess in the Big 12. Rick says he doesn't see it. Big 10 and SEC will dominate. Other leagues get one team. I don't know that the SEC and the Big 10 are going to get 9 of 12 representatives, which would be what would have to happen, Rick, for that scenario, for the Big 12 to get one, the ACC to get one, and then you get your one non-power league. That would mean 9 from those leagues. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
You also have to take into account Notre Dame, you know, as another team that, of course, they're right there. Yep. They're in the top 10, you know, preseason as well.
Can Notre Dame take the place of the non-power five? I need to look at that. I don't know the answer to that, actually. If they can be the non-power four representative, like, could they steal a bid, let's call it, from, you know, Cincinnati of past, right? I don't know the answer to that, actually. That's an interesting question. But either way, they're not going to get 9 of 12, I don't think, Rick. So I think, you know, like, can you be the league that gets 2 or the ACC? I mean, I think there's room for it. It's just, what is it, you know, what does it take? Because here's what we know about the Big Ten. Big Ten is top heavy. And then it's bad. That's what, the history of the Big Ten. Now, we do have to add Oregon and Washington into the mix here with them. And I don't even think, is Washington even in the poll? I mean, they lost a lot of players.
Yeah, I don't think they are.
But, you know, you got to mix those two in. But forever, it's been the league of Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. And that's kind of it for teams that are actually really, really good. Now, obviously, you would have to put you know, Oregon and Washington and USC, I'm not a total believer in. So I think there's plenty of room for the Big 12 to get a couple of in, but it's going to take, you know, it's going to take navigating the messy waters of what looks to be a top to bottom, no weeks off league.
I disagree with Rick's assertion of the Big 10 and the SEC getting a bunch of teams and the other leagues getting one, but it doesn't have to do with the Big 12. It has to do with the ACC. I mean, if you just take the preseason poll into account, you've got both Florida State and Clemson in the top 15. I think that that league is more likely than the Big 12 is to get multiple teams in the 12 team playoff. And so I think that there'll probably be a couple of representatives there. Miami is also in the top 20. So there aren't as many total teams from the ACC in the top 25 preseason poll as the Big 12. But I do think that the teams that are in there are probably more likely to make the 12-team playoff than any of the schools in the Big 12 that are at the top of the polls.
The advantage that you'll have being the ACC is it feels like there's more cupcakes, right, for the good teams to beat up on. This is the issue with the Big 12. Who's the cupcake right now? Who is it? Houston maybe?
Probably. Yeah, Houston.
But that's kind of it, right? Like there's not
Cincinnati, maybe. Probably throw Cincinnati
in there. And
that's
what's going to make it awesome for us to watch throughout
Colorado,
the course of the season.
Arizona State.
Maybe. But again, like I get it with Colorado. I do. But at the same time, I also realize how much talent they did ultimately bring in. And while it doesn't seem like that's going to work, doesn't seem like that now, I can't forget what TCU did a couple of years ago with a whole bunch of transfer dudes that were just really talented. So we'll see. But I don't think you can mark that down in ink right now like you could with some games that you're going to see out of the Big Ten or the ACC or even to a very much lesser degree, the SEC, right? Like there's Vanderbilt and that's about it. But you just don't have any cupcakes this year that are a guaranteed cupcake in the Big 12. And while that will be incredible for us during the regular season, it will be stressful in these rankings. There are fewer, you know, non-con games in the future. Right. There are going to be fewer non-con games to sort of get out there and prove it. So it will be fascinating. And I'm sure that we'll have moments of frustration when the SEC and the Big Ten are sort of dominating this thing. But again, I would say the alternative is worse. The worst case scenario is much worse. So if you can guarantee me that in the future of college football, at least one team, if not a good chance of two or more teams, are reaching the postseason ultimately, I'm going to take that as a win. Because the reality is it's been far less likely than that to play for it in the past. And if you told me what are the chances in the old system that the Big 12 could get there without Texas or Oklahoma in the league, I'd have told you they're very, very low on a year-to-year basis. How many times have we felt like Oklahoma State got screwed in the CFP over the years?
Yeah, it's been a lot of times.
Feels like a billion times, right? That's what we're avoiding now. So let's see it play out. And these preseason polls, again, they mean less in totality because it does come down to the CFP rankings, but the perception that you get out of this does sometimes matter in the end when you're thinking about teams' momentum or any of that little stuff that they're trying to, you know, to comb through when they're going through those rankings. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about K-State and Kansas's spot in here more specifically. K-State in at number 17, Kansas in at number 24. We'll take a look at what we think about those two spots, what they could mean. Would that be good enough to get them in? If we were looking at it, not in a CFP direct ranking, but just if we looked at this sort of stacking, thinking about a CFP ranking, could it be good enough? I think it would be very, very close for K-State. So we'll talk about that. We'll set up our contest here for the day. HTO, you can win some HTO iced tea, more than 20 flavors. You can win some free rain coffee, a free one of each from either Wichita location or down in Derby. All you got to do to win is text the keyword TEA. To the short code 20357. Good luck on that. Win that on us here at Sports Daily. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. We're going to come back. We'll continue to dig into this poll. We'll have Harrison Butker thoughts. Big contract for a kicker, for that particular kicker. We'll have that for you in the second hour. as well, and we'll get back to the Royals talk. Don't go away. Here we go. It's Sports Daily on a Tuesday. We'll be right back.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Back in, everybody. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Appreciate Crestview's support of the program. Always enjoy our time out there. We're getting closer and closer to a little golfing weather, Tommy. I'm sort of just standing by idly waiting to get back out there. What do we have today? Let me pull up the Storm Team 12 app here. Oh, man, 90 degrees. I might have to try to get out there and play a little this evening. Now, I'm looking at the evening because I got to play twilight golf. Try to play nine holes. But this might be the night to get out there and swing it around a little bit.
Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's going to be terrible today. I know that like it's going to be fairly warm as the week goes on. But this weekend should cool off a decent amount if the rain can hold off a little bit. And I know we need the rain, so don't get me wrong. But from a golfing perspective, if you can get in a round of golf without rain and it's a little bit cooler, then that's going to be a great plan.
I want to go out there and be dumped on in a deluge. We need some rain right now. We're dealing with water restrictions.
If there could just be, like, I'm just thinking like maybe a 3 to 4 hour just gap in that lines up perfectly with my tee time, that would be great.
Rain always. Rain right on top of you if you're out there trying to play. I don't want to deal with water restrictions. We need it. We need the rain. I don't see any out there for a little while. But thank you to Crestview. If it is raining, you could still play indoor tennis. You could still go check out the restaurant and bar area. Lots of great stuff. I know they're redoing their kids club right now. They're doing a lot of renovations out there, quite frankly, over the past, I don't know, 6-8 months or so. So get out there, check it out. Tell them we sent you. We appreciate them supporting the program. All right, Tommy, we continue with this coach's poll top 25 here. K-State in at 17. You said you'd like to see him a few spots higher. I'm fine at 17. At 17, you can make all the noise you need to make. At 17, you can fly up that ranking pretty quickly. I'm just telling you that here's the good news for K-State and KU. And KU getting in is awesome just because the obvious reasons that they just haven't done it in 16, 17 years. When you have Avery Johnson and Jalen Daniels, and you have two guys that are legitimate Heisman candidates, and you have two guys that play the exciting brand of football that they can play, we know, at their ceiling. If there is early season success combined with that, all the attention is going to be on those schools. So, like, that's what's going to be beautiful about K-State and KU potentially this year. If they can just win their games early, everybody's going to be watching because it will probably be because the two quarterbacks are playing really well. And those two quarterbacks are national headline type quarterbacks. There are a lot of reasons that I'm so excited about this college football season. Obviously that both of those teams are quality enough to both potentially reach college football playoff. That's the most obvious reason, but it's also because their quarterbacks are flashy quarterbacks that are going to bring a ton of national attention to both schools. And I think we would see that then in a poll. So I'm good with these starting spots because there's a number in front of their name. And if they win their games early, that number is going to shrink. And it's going to shrink quickly.
Remember when KU really kind of captured the national attention when they were winning those games to start off their season under Leipold and nobody expected them to be there. And then all of a sudden they're in the polls and you've got College Game Day showing up and you've got all of that. It took about 5 or 6 weeks, I think, if I remember correctly, for the national media to really catch up on KU.
Yep.
There's an opportunity for both of these teams, for both KU and K-State, to capture that attention really early. I don't disagree with you. I think that, you know, from the beginning, you're paying attention to both of these teams. Now, that does different things. I mean, that does different things to you, you know, especially for a program like the Jayhawks that they haven't been in this position in a long time. You know, Lance Leipold has talked multiple times during this offseason. I've heard him speak and do interviews where he said, it's maybe the most anticipated season in Kansas football history, at least in a long time. One of them for sure, at the very least. You've got to make sure that you are living up to those expectations.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the difficult thing. Where it was, I think that it was partially easier, you know, a couple of years ago when nobody was expecting you to be there, you could fly under the radar. and you could just kind of win games and then have that chip on your shoulder, like nobody's paying attention to us, you know, et cetera. People are expecting things from you, and they're expecting things from both of these teams this season. Those expectations are there. I think for Kansas State, it's going to be easier to manage those expectations because they've been there before, and you know that while you've got a new quarterback that's taking over, there are some really key pieces of the team that return. And so like that, and there are two for KU, don't get me wrong, but I think the pressure is squarely more on the shoulders of the Jayhawks than the Wildcats as far as managing those expectations.
There are so many advantages to having that number in front of your name early in a season. It just, and this is what I was talking about in the last segment, it just means people are paying more attention to you early, right? You combine that with the fact that you're going to see, if things go well in the first month of the season, let's say they both, you know, win all their games in the first month, everything's going well, you will see the chatter begin about Avery Johnson and Jalen Daniels as Heisman candidates. I mean, you just will, because of the way that they play. And that will continue to build this buzz. And you're right. Like that also adds a ton of pressure, right? You're not sneaking up on anybody this year when you are in a preseason top 25 poll, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, whether it's accurate. And I feel like it is. I feel like it's pretty accurate based on what we've seen, what we expect. I mean, basically for KU, and they lost some players, don't get me wrong, but you're adding Jalen Daniels back to last year's team in a lot of ways. And again, I don't want, that's not taking anything away from what they lost. It's just like, in reality, they should be better, right? For K-State, they lost even more to the NFL, but they're adding Avery Johnson to the mix. And they still return a lot, too.
And Dylan Edwards. Like, they're bringing in Dylan Edwards, too.
And Dylan Edwards, right? And I think nationally, people aren't quite as much on that as we are here, obviously, because we watched him in high school. But yeah, remember how when things were going well for Colorado last year, remember how big a part of that he was. And so it all adds to this intrigue early. And like, and we'll do this maybe in the second hour. We can look at the first month and, like, you know, how tough will it be to open with four straight wins for both of these teams? Because if that happens, I'm telling you, they're going to climb. They're going to climb, and they're going to be people watching them, and they're going to be in every window nationally, television-wise, that they possibly can be. Like, it's all going to go well for them. And I think it's because who they have at quarterback and because they have a little number in front of their name to start the season. We'll get into that in the second hour. We'll get more into the Royals as well. The Harrison Butker story. Haven't touched on it yet. That's where we'll start hour number two. It's all Brockton Caster. It's Sports Daily on a Tuesday. Don't go anywhere.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is hour number two, and we are excited to be here with you. It's Jacob Albrecht alongside Tommy Kester, Jad Chambers, man in that IHOP hotline, brought to you by IHOP. Excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th. That's available for you. Also, thanks to everybody watching us right now on our video streams, 12 News Connected, X, YouTube, Facebook. You can leave comments there as well. And if you're listening to the podcasted form of this show through the Odyssey app, we appreciate you as well. You can always email us. The different ways you can find to get in touch with us here. Ken says, based on our conversation just before the break, KU with question marks on the O-line, numbers 4 and 6, which would be Devin Neal and Jalen Daniels, are awesome, but need a good line to be successful. I would agree. Similar questions, I think, for K-State, and those are the things you just don't know until they line up and actually start playing. But I would say both camps feel relatively optimistic about the line, so we're not going to know until we see it, but we appreciate the comment there, Ken. All right, Tommy, let's get into this Harrison Butker deal. So Butker negotiates his own contract, apparently. I did not know he did that, but he does. And he negotiates it well because he's now the highest paid kicker in the NFL. Ties him to the Chiefs through 2028, 4 years, $25.5 million, just under $18 million guaranteed. I do not know what this means for the cap situation overall for the Chiefs. I do not know if this would inhibit any way their ability to, you know, go get Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and Trent McDuffie deals done in the future. I don't think it impacts those as much as some of the other deals we've talked about over the years. Snead not doing that one. Tyreek Hill not doing that one. Never signing the left tackles after they trade from all those things. But we look at it there from a football perspective, you know, it's almost a no-brainer. Not quite, but it's almost a no-brainer. You're talking about the guy with the second best field goal percentage in NFL history behind Justin Tucker, who may very well be the GOAT. You're talking about a guy last year who kicked him at about 95%, just an absurd percentage. And he's done that kind of thing where he's only missed a couple of field goals over the course of a season twice in his career. You do fear a little bit of what you saw in 2022, but, you know, there were some injuries and some things there. But from a football perspective, when there are so many teams around the league who struggle at that position, I think it makes a lot of sense to do this. You just don't want to leave it out on the field. Now, here's the flip side. The only flip side I could say, if it created any sort of salary cap issue, Tommy, and I assume that it won't, is that they'll probably lean on him a little less this year than they did last year because I think the offense is going to be a whole lot better. They would not, absolutely flat, would not have won a Super Bowl without him last year. No question about it. Are they that reliant on a kicker this year? Probably not, but they could be over the next four at some point. So from a football perspective, I mean, he's just been nails for a long, long time for them. I get it. Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, to your point, as far as the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl without him, I mean, he kicked a field goal to tie the game in the Super Bowl against the 49ers, and then the Chiefs went on to win the game. So, you know, like, just even simply put as that, I mean, they wouldn't have won a Super Bowl without him in that particular moment. But overall, in totality, that team is, the Chiefs are significantly better with Harrison Butker on the field, and he's been overwhelmingly consistent over the course of his career as well. He ranks second all-time behind only Justin Tucker in career field goal percentage. There was a period of time, and it wasn't last season, it was the season before, I believe, where it was shaky at times a little bit for Harrison Butker. He didn't really have the best season, and I know that he had some injuries and things like that he was dealing with, but other than that, he's been pretty lights out and automatic in that position, in that role for Kansas City for quite a while now. And so I totally understand from just a sheer on the field perspective why the Chiefs wanted to lock him in and extend him. I mentioned Justin Tucker just a moment ago. It's the same reason why the Ravens lock in Justin Tucker, and they continue to make him one of the highest paid kickers in the sure. NFL because he's so consistent and unconscious year after year.
And in, by comparison's sake on this, it puts him slightly ahead of Justin Tucker and Jake Elliott as far as it really if you look at the totality of the contract, it is just a tick ahead of what Justin Tucker gets paid. It makes sense. The contract makes sense. The player makes sense. All of it makes sense. I think the Chiefs, I didn't expect this to get done this way. I mean, I do always wonder with kickers though, like what if he gets the yips? You know, like what if, like, are you really, like, how much damage could that do if it just falls apart, as it does for a lot of kickers over time? I do think with Butker, though, at this point, he has now played 7 NFL seasons. It's almost happened once and there were injuries involved. I think the chances of that are pretty low. It is a guy who's clearly, like, focused on his craft and nothing seems to shake him. Now, we'll see, because there was some off-the-field distractions this year. But he gave the same speech he's given in the past, and again,
it didn't shake him. I mean, there was a lot of the one thing I'll say about Harrison Butker, and I was on record saying that I disagreed with a lot of what Harrison Butker said, and I wasn't happy with it. But one thing I can say about Harrison Butker is he didn't let any of that backlash or criticism or whatever after those remarks shake him. I don't think. I mean, I don't know, but he held pretty firm on all of that, and so
isn't it wild that a kicker has. I'm trying to write this. I'll take you a little inside baseball. I'm at 12 News yesterday, just a little editorial. And yes, people out there, there is like local media where nobody's walking in the room with a bias. We work with all kinds of different people, all kinds of different beliefs and thoughts. And that's what it's kind of like a locker room. That's what's cool about it, right? You can have these discussions. And that news came down, and I'm trying to write that script. And I'm like, okay, is this one that you can keep to just football like you'd like to do, right? Or do you not have a choice to bring everything up from this offseason? And it quickly was like, you can't ignore these things that, you know, and so it's like, okay, well, let's go try to work through this here. And you're like, and I'm like, controversial comments, is that fair? That's eye of the beholder. And it's like, no, I mean, you had people on both sides. So I suppose that creates controversy. Okay. And it's like, made a lot of people mad, but at the same time, made him the top jersey seller in the NFL, right? Like his jersey was the number one in sales for a little while. Like you have to think about all that stuff and it's a kicker. It's a kicker. Like what a crazy world. Like he's a kicker. Nobody cares about kickers, right? In normal terms, like Justin Tucker has become the most famous kicker just because he's been so clutch for so long. But other than, you know, what was it? Who was the kicker that Peyton Manning got onto? Was it Mike Vanderjagt at some point?
Like called him his the idiot kickers, kicker during the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, like kickers don't generate headlines. And you have Butker who has been, you can make the case that his story was the most talked about story of the offseason. And it's a kicker. Now, do the Chiefs let any of that be a distraction? Ultimately, that's all that matters, by the way. Look, you had a Catholic dude giving a very Catholic speech at a Catholic college. Okay. Like it is what it is. Right. And it doesn't, to me, it's always been about like, it doesn't really matter if you agree or disagree. I think it's important in this country that you're able to do both of those things, but it has been interesting to see the lightning rod in both directions for this guy who's a kicker. The one thing I will say is I would have some concern just that could be a distraction in any way, but it doesn't appear that it is. So what you've had is, you know, Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes basically saying like, we don't agree with everything he says, but he's a good teammate. Like, you know, he's one of us and he's a kicker. Like kickers and the players don't really hang out anyway, but it's like, you know, he's a good teammate and he seems like he does the right things off the field. Yeah, we don't agree with everything he thinks, obviously. So what? Who cares? Because I would tell you this, and this is what always intrigues me so much. Do you think they agree with everything Rashee Rice has done this offseason?
No, absolutely not.
Were people nearly as angry with what Rashee Rice did this offseason?
Nope.
So why do you think it's going to be a distraction? Why? And this is a hypothetical question. I'm not asking you this. Hypothetically, to everybody out there, why do you think this would be a distraction to them? if Rashee Rice's situation, if you go way back to some of the things that Tyreek Hill has dealt with in the off seasons, to what Andy Reid's son has dealt with in the off season, to what Patrick Mahomes' brother has been through in an off season, Kareem Hunt has been through in an off season. Why on earth do you think that a controversial sort of political take would be the thing that unravels what has been remarkably an ironclad locker room? It's not going to. It's not. I mean, if all of these other things have never been able to shake that particular locker room, which is one of the most impressive things about it, this ain't going to shake it, right? And so if you're you know, the powers that be for the Chiefs, and you're thinking about all these things when you guarantee and set the new record for a kicker contract, you have to think about this stuff. But as you do, again, I say this all the time, Chiefs fans are so fortunate to have what they have right now. That's one of the reasons you're so fortunate to have what you have right now, because nothing shakes the locker room. When we're talking about on the field, like, nothing shakes it. And there have been plenty of opportunities for that to happen, and it just doesn't. So, no, I don't think the kicker is going to shake it unless he starts missing field goals. Then maybe, you know, that's really all you have to look at. As long as he's making field goals, like, his thoughts off the field on, you know, whatever, his religious, but that's not going to shake this locker room. Nothing ever has.
Yeah, I think that we also have to start shifting our mindset. And I started doing this yesterday. It finally hit me when this contract was signed, that when you think of the foundational pieces of this Kansas City Chiefs team, historically it's been Patrick Mahomes, it's been Travis Kelce, and then it's been Chris Jones. And I think that was up in the air, as recently as last offseason, about whether or not he'd even be back on the team. But I think obviously now with his new contract and all of that, Chris Jones has been firmly cemented into that foundational piece for the Chiefs. I think Harrison Butker is the fourth. I never thought about Harrison Butker being solidified as one of the foundational pieces of this roster. And there's always been conversation. Heck, you and I have had this discussion quite a few times about how if your number is not 15, 87, or 95, then Brett Veach is going to look at you probably as expendable. Doesn't mean that you're definitely going to not be on the team, but as long as you're taking care of those other guys, those three guys, I mean, they shipped off multiple players during this offseason that I didn't think exactly.
Who was just voted yesterday as the best player in the NFL, which is a totally...
Hey, they didn't re-sign Tommy Townsend, and Tommy Townsend was a really good punter, and they shipped,
Dustin Colquitt,
you know? And so there are all of these players that when they end up moving on, you're like, okay, well, the foundational pieces are set. It's pretty clear. We know who they're going to build this team around. With the way that they paid Harrison Butker and locked him in, he's absolutely one of those foundational pieces for the Chiefs moving forward. And I had never put him in that category before.
I mean, I think it gets overlooked how much of a weapon a great kicker is. And you just Justin Tucker has been the example for so long. Harrison Butker's been just as good as Justin Tucker over the same stretch of time, basically. And the other thing is he kicks him from distance too. He kicks him in the clutch. He kicks him from distance, and he just makes 90% of them. Go look all time, right? At your best field goal kickers. And Butker is right there near the top of everything.
And think about how important historically certain kickers have been to, if you want to call it a dynasty, if you want to call it great team, Super Bowl champions, you know, going back to the Tom Brady years, I mean, he had two fantastic kickers on his team. He had Adam Vinatieri, and then he had Steven Gostkowski. Both of those guys were fantastic kickers. And, you know, in at least in the case of Vinatieri, I know Gostkowski also did this, but Vinatieri early on had some really memorable kicks that without his kicks, the Patriots don't get their early Super Bowl. So, like, that can't be understated either. The importance of having an unconscious lockdown kicker every single time. It's like having a lockdown closer in Major League Baseball that every time they go out to pitch, they're going to get a save and they're going to seal the victory for your team. They're going to be clutch. The best teams usually have the best kickers.
And you'll never escape. It's so interesting that Travis Kelce is like stuck in the middle of this because of his girlfriend. Like, you're never going to escape now what follows Harrison Butker, which is a crowd that is like very fond of Travis Kelce's girlfriend, and then very not fond of Travis Kelce's teammate. And like the fact that I was at a concert this weekend where maybe the top headline that came out of it was the jersey number of Morgan Wallen. And like, what does that mean? Is he saying that he likes Harrison Butker?
Yeah.
Is he saying, and I'm like, I don't care. Like,
by the way, that was also the jersey number of Matt Cassel. So I'm more offended that he was wearing the Matt Cassel jersey than he was wearing
and the Harrison Butker jersey. I'm looking, because people are talking about it too. They're like, do you think he was showing like that he loves Harrison Butker? And I'm like, guys, I don't know a lot. Like, I don't know hardly anything about Morgan Wallen, but he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to make a political statement. Like, I think he probably liked to stay away with his past away from that as far as he could. And then I looked and he wore that number at other places. I think it was his old baseball name. I don't care. But again, let's say he did. Guess who walked him out in that jersey to the front of the stadium?
Mahomes and Kelce
and Chris Jones.
Chris Jones was there,
by the way. Yeah. So, like, it is an absolute luxury for the Chiefs that they can just stay united and stay laser focused. And honestly, like, I make a lot of jokes because I don't want to take any of this stuff too seriously. People get too angry about it. And I don't think it's worth the time. It is an interesting representation of society, what you see with that, to me, that I know for a fact that a lot of those guys don't think the same things politically, like any of it, but they're all great teammates. They're friends. Would you believe that people could be friends even if they think things differently politically? Oh my goodness. Even if they might've had a different set of circumstances growing up that has shaped their views a little bit differently than their neighbor, they can still be friends. They can be cordial to each other. My goodness. That's the beauty of sports, right? We're watching the Olympics right now. That's the beauty of all of it. That you set that stuff aside, man. That stuff's not as important as that connection that you make. So, anywho, the Chiefs have their kicker for a long time. What if he misses field goals, I guess, is the next biggest question. But when you look at just the impact he's had on this team on the field, his comparison around the league, you absolutely justify making him the highest paid kicker. I mean, it just is. It's a no-brainer if you're the Chiefs, if you can afford it, right? Do I make him the highest paid kicker if it compromises my ability to sign Creed Humphrey? No, I do not. But I don't think it will, or I don't think Brett Veach would have done the deal. I think they squeeze it in just fine, and we'll see. It is a lot of guaranteed money with a position that can be a little volatile, but I think he's proven it over enough years that you make total sense out of it when it comes to Harrison Butker. All right, your comments on that, you can call us on the IHOP hotline, 869-1240. Be nice, everybody. We're not looking for a fight. Nobody is. You can also leave us your comments on our video stream on Facebook, on YouTube, on X, 12 News Connected. Lots of different ways to take in the show. We appreciate it however it is that you are taking in the show. When we return, let's look at the Royals tonight. What are their chances of bouncing back here in this series and still taking 2 out of 3 against Boston? Just as big tonight as it was yesterday. Got off to a rocky start. We'll look ahead for the Royals, maybe elsewhere around the league. There is one other NFL storyline I think that we want to watch for just a little bit. It's a star player looking like he's going to be traded from the team that the Chiefs played last year in the Super Bowl. You're taking a power ranking across the league when you're the Chiefs. We'll talk about that as well. It's all coming for you. All Brockton Castor on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you. Jad Chambers manning that IHOP hotline, keeping this thing rocking and rolling for us. We are rocking and rolling. Chiefs camp, we talked about Harrison Butker. So Mitch Holthus has been having conversations with Steve and Ted, and Jad has been getting that gathered up. Before we go back to the Royals, let's stay on football for just a little bit. So today, what Jad has pulled is Mitch, and you know, we talked about this preseason game coming up. And just by the way, we did not get any insight on how much players will play from Andy Reid. He said he'll tell us that later in the week. We anticipate it'll be the same as it always is, probably a series for the starters and in this first one. But one of the things that we do want to watch for is the wide receiver room and how quickly they're acclimating. In practice, it looks good. What about games? Hollywood Brown, a big part of that. He was the big free agent acquisition. How does he like the Chiefs right now? Let's get some audio from Hollywood Brown. This coming from Mitch Holthus this morning on Steve and Ted. Here's what Mitch had to say about the new wide receiver.
But with Hollywood...
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks... What happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
But he's never been in a system like this. He has never been with a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. He had the early days of Lamar Jackson. And so right now, I'm not sure there's anybody happier than Hollywood Brown.
For me, it feels like match made in heaven. I'm excited to be here. It's just been great since I've been here. I've been loving it.
And this offense, how much does it fit your skills?
It fit me very good, very well. When you look at all the things I want to do on the field, Coach Reed let me do it, so I'm excited.
And to play with Pat, we've already seen it. I watched it all through OTAs, but then seeing it out here. What about playing with Patrick and what that means?
He's one of the best to do it. You know, it's nothing he can't do on the field. Like, some of the throws he makes is, like, incredible. He sees the field very well. And so for us, it's real easy, you know, to get out your break and knowing where the ball going to be. It's perfect.
Third level of the offense is open for business again. Hollywood will make a play every day. What a surprise, I think, everyone in the Chiefs Kingdom camp is his consistency. He doesn't flash and disappear. He is steady as he goes, and then will make a great play. Good route runner, immediately got onto the same radar with Mahomes, and he's a high-volume guy. I was checking it out. 18 times in his career, he has had double-digit targets in a single game.
They don't need a high-volume guy, but it's nice to have it in the bag. If they have a high volume guy, I would imagine Hollywood Brown would be the third option for high volume behind Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice. But it's nice to know it's there, because there could be games where any of these guys are the high volume guys. I think having different options there is interesting. I don't know what Hollywood Brown's role is with the team, knowing what Worthy has been doing, but I know it's going to be great. He fits so much of what we thought they needed, just sort of like a consistent guy, a potential game breaker, but he does a little of everything, right? So if we try to define out what all the receivers do, we know what Kelce does, right? He's the option over the middle of the field. He's always option A. He's the safety blanket, all of those things that he does. We don't need to talk about him. Rashee Rice is the move the sticks guy, kind of like he turned into last year, right? Maybe he breaks one off after he runs, but he's kind of the move the sticks guy, keep things going. If Worthy ends up being, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling of this offense and the consistent deep threat option, and I don't know what he's going to be. I just know he has that obviously in the tank based on what we've seen at practice. What does that mean Hollywood Brown is? I think he is as versatile, maybe the most versatile as any of this group. Maybe he does everything. I don't know that he gets locked into one specific thing, Tommy. I'm not sure with him. I just know he's an immense talent, and you'd like to get the ball in his hands, and I think that they will. How much? How many times in a game? Five? I don't know. I mean, there's only one ball and about 15 options, but it is interesting, and I do think watching his role early will be intriguing for the Chiefs.
I think that Hollywood Brown can impact a game in a variety of different ways, and that's one of the big appeals of him coming into Kansas City. But I do think right off the bat, one of the things that he will do probably from day one is serve as a really, really effective decoy for this Chiefs offense. Because I think that, you know, a lot of defenses are going to, they know his speed. They know his upside. They know what Hollywood Brown can do. He hasn't always done it in his career, but his upside is always there. The athleticism has always been there. The flash has always been there. Xavier Worthy, regardless of what he's done in training camp and how great it is still kind of an unknown, especially to defenses. And so I think that defenses are going to rather try to lock down on Hollywood Brown because they know what Brown can do to hurt them. And so I think that he can be used from like day one, from the get-go, as a really, really solid decoy. That may open up opportunities, and I think it will, for guys like Xavier Worthy to really feast. And so that's why I think it's not going to take you, you know, remember Rashee Rice a year ago, it took him a while to get acclimated into the offense and, you know, his stat lines really started to, you know, improve as the year went on for Kansas City. But I think for Xavier Worthy, you might be seeing him be able to impact that stat line from game one because of how effective a decoy I think Hollywood Brown can be.
They're all decoys to each other, I think. You know, what I think will be interesting is Rashee Rice, you know, he chiseled out what he chiseled out, I think, based on necessity more than anything else last year. How much was necessity and how much was him? I think that'll be something we get a good grasp of early in this season, because if he maintains the role he had last year, then it'll tell you he's that dude. My guess is he will not. I still think he's going to be good. Don't get me wrong. I still think he's going to be very good. I just think what we saw out of him last year had a lot to do with they just didn't have another choice, right? And so now they have at least two other good choices. What does that mean for him? So all of it is a good thing for Patrick Mahomes, but each of them individually, I'm just not sure yet. We got to see that. And then I think we will begin to see just a little bit of him preseason. Probably not in this first game because you'll only get about a series. But toward that last preseason game, if like they play a half, I think that'll give us a pretty good indication. If you're playing fantasy football and you're trying to do early drafts, I don't know. I don't know who the guy to bet on is. I would say it's either Rashee Rice, honestly. As much as I like Hollywood Brown, I like Hollywood Brown a lot. I'd say it's probably Rice or Worthy that you would bet on. Because I think they're all probably in about that same range. I would go with those other two, but I love Hollywood Brown. I think he's an immense talent, and I hope he stays healthy. That's the other thing about having this many guys. It protects you from injury a little bit, and it lessens the injury risk of each of them individually too. Okay, Tommy, let's look at the Royals a little bit tonight here. You get the rest of the series with your two horses, sort of. This is where you need them to step up, right? If we look at the game tonight specifically, you're going to catch Lugo and Brian Bello. The Royals are favored in this game, -130 on the money line. This is probably one where, you know, if you're feeling good about Lugo and he was good his last time out, that I would probably be comfortable going to the run line at -1.5 because it's all the way up to 160. I like the Royals' chances to win these next two games. It's Cutter Crawford tomorrow, I believe, right? And he's good. He's as good as the Red Sox have. He has been in some high profile games and everything else. So I would say if you're looking at each individual game, tonight's the one you feel like you sort of have to have based on the matchup. I don't know if you agree with that, but yeah, it's Crawford tomorrow. Crawford's pretty good. It's Reagan's tomorrow. But this tonight feels like the one where it's like, okay, you gotta have this one tonight.
Yeah, I think that Seth Lugo has shown more often than not that decline that everybody was concerned about coming out of the All-Star break, maybe isn't as realistic as, you know, we all thought at one time. He's had a couple of really good outings in a row. I think that this is going to be probably the largest test since the All-Star break for Seth Lugo, because you've got, you know, pretty significant wild card ramifications on this particular game against this particular team. It's one thing to have a really solid outing against a team like the White Sox or the Tigers. It's another thing when you're playing a team above 500 at home, as you're both battling for basically the same wild card spot. So the stakes are high for Seth Lugo. Remember, the last time that Lugo faced the Red Sox was right before the All-Star break, and it was in Boston. And it was the game that I think ultimately cost Lugo the opportunity to start the All-Star game for the AL. He did not have a good outing in that game. And that was kind of the first sign of, uh-oh, like, is this something going on? Like, is this not the dream start that Lugo had? Is it not sustainable the entire season? I think he's done a fairly good job of quieting that for the most part after the All-Star break. But the last time out against this same team, Lugo did not pitch well. And so he's going to have to turn that around in front of the home crowd at Kauffman tonight and show that, yes, the success that he's had this season absolutely is sustainable.
It's on Lugo, and I still want to see the bullpen play out. I want to see Lugo go six, and I want to see Lugo go seven, and then I'd love to see it go Bubich and Ursic, right? Like, I want, we didn't get to see it last night because they didn't get there. We thought we were going to. I'm sitting there watching that as the Royals tie the game. I'm like, okay, we're going to get our bullpen lineup exactly what we asked for. Here we go. They're going to pitch 7, 8, 9, and then Singer couldn't get through that sixth inning, and then things unraveled on Zerpa. So we won't see Zerpa. I mean, I don't know if we look back at yesterday and say, okay, who's out of the mix there? Certainly Zerpa would be to be in there, but it's some combination, it looks like, of Harvey, of Long, of Bubich, and of Ursing. Those appear to be the four guys, and I would agree with those four guys. Early indications would be that Quatraro prefers, you know, Harvey to be in the highest leverage moment. I don't happen to agree with that based on what we've seen at the moment. I would say Ursic. Bubich's role is probably the most intriguing. It doesn't really matter the order of things, Tommy, and I've said this before. I mean, ultimately, it does. I just don't know if you're going to get the Royals to a place where you can build up that psychological advantage of knowing who's taking the ball in the seventh, who's taking it in the eighth, who's taking it in the ninth specifically, as much as we just need to see that they've got three or four consistent options back there in whatever the order happens to be. Because you can blow a lead just as easily in the eighth inning as you can the ninth inning, or the sixth inning, and then more importantly in the seventh inning. We just need to see that they've got four guys. I think those are absolutely the four guys that we will look at the closest. And then there's Will Smith. Tommy, Will Smith's been really good. Like, he's been really good lately. And I'm hard on Will Smith. And this happened to him last year, right? He was given a big role early in the season. He survived. Then he just absolutely unraveled and fell apart. And then over the end of the year for the Rangers last year, he gave them quality outings. And I don't know what his role would be, because they have Long back there, you know, situational lefty perhaps, which is, you know, become harder to do in today's modern baseball with the rule changes. But he's another guy, I think, that we'll probably see take the ball in some high leverage situations and make us panic a little bit. But you know that, and then if that's the case, now they've got, what does that give them? Four options at the back end. It feels like they have enough on the roster. It's just, how do you sort it out? Yet the bullpen is the reason they've lost the last three losses that they have. It's been because of the bullpen.
Yeah. I think that really, again, it goes back to what I mentioned at the start of the show, that I know that really the way that the bullpen has been managed this season for the most part has been highly situational, and I get that, and that's, I think, due out of necessity. I wouldn't mind seeing more set and stable roles for the relievers that they have, especially the ones that are, you know, more reliable. And if that's it definitely has been Ursig, no doubt about it. Will Smith has been reliable over the last month and a half. Sam Long, I mentioned him. I think he's an underrated reliever on this team. He's not going to really light you up, but he's been pretty consistent for the most part. I think that those are the guys, and Chris Bubich, I think you could probably add to that mix as well. I'm not saying that it has to be a hard and fast, this guy pitches the seventh, this guy pitches the eighth.
I would like it to be,
I don't think that's realistic. I'd like it to, I'm not sure it's realistic. But I would like to see a little bit more of a understanding of when these pitchers are going to be pitching and put them into the right situation for them. And I'm not saying that Cutrero hasn't done that by and large this season, but if I'm one of the relievers in the bullpen, it might be hard for me to, from game to game, understand when I might be used, if I might be used, what the situation will dictate. I do think that there is something to be said for you can't get into that routine. You can't get into that habit where a closer that you know he's coming in the ninth, he can get ready all game long knowing that if the game is in the ninth and there's a lead, that you are going to come in and you are going to close the game. The Royals don't have that really with any of their relievers.
There's a difference in trying to navigate the end of a game and shortening the game. The great Royals bullpens of 14 and 15 shortened the game. This bullpen tries to navigate the end of a game, right? And I think those are two very different things when it comes down to a bullpen. Again, I'm not sure Cutrero has what he needs to be able to shorten the game like that. I'm not sure any of these guys can do it. It would certainly be nice to get him to at least shorten it by an inning, right? And that's what a ninth inning closer can do for you. But right now, he's still just trying to figure out how to navigate the end of a game. How do you not screw it up when the starter hands the ball off? And I think those are two very, very, very different things as a manager. And I think Cutrero would like to shorten the game. Look, he has tried to chisel roles out for guys. It's just unraveling for a few of those guys. So now it's almost like he's got to start all over here. But he has a whole lot more weapons now to do it with than he did, you know, a month ago. And so it's going to just take a little time. I think by September, we're probably, in an optimistic take, we're probably going to have a pretty good idea of how the back of a game will shape up for the Royals. But it will take a little time to get there. You got to probably start with the ninth and then work your way backwards. And right now, I think the ninth should go to Ursic because I think his stuff has been the most electric. I think Cutrero would like it to go to Harvey, though, is what we've seen early on. And that's probably what we'll see in the short term. If you told me tonight that Lugo went six innings and then you had a two-run lead and you were going to go a reliever in the seventh, eighth, and ninth, I would bet you a dollar, Tommy, that it would go Bubich, Ursig, Harvey. That's what I think would happen. Now, Sam Long would like to have something to say about that, and maybe he replaces Bubich. I'm not sure. But I think it will go Ursig, 8, Harvey, 9 at least, if the Royals are in that situation tonight. That would be my bet.
Yeah, I think that is the most potential that the back end of a Royals bullpen has probably had all season long. And that's probably the one that I would think we'll see at the end of the regular season and going potentially into the playoffs. So I think that getting them ready now in early August for what that back end of the bullpen might look like or should look like, I think is the right thing to do. As much as I want to see that in the same way that you do, I'm not sure that that's going to be the direction that Cutrero goes, because it's kind of just like,
it's,
you know,
not what I want to see. I want to see Ursic.
Just kind of see who he's going to put out there, like who it's going to be from one game to the next. And, you know, I've been really hesitant to criticize the way Cutrero manages his bullpen. And I've said it before, by and large, he's managed it better this season than last year. But now you're at a point where it's big time, high leverage situations that have ramifications towards a playoff chase. It can't just be a game by game, who's available? Let's see who we can throw out.
Yeah, like, no.
There's got to be a method behind that madness.
None of this is a criticism of Cutrero. None of it. Because I don't think there has been an obvious answer. So don't take it that way. That's not what I'm trying to say. And if you're asking me what I would like to see, I'd like to see 8 and 9 go Bubich, Ursic. I don't think that's what I'm going to see. I think that he feels obliged to at least keep running Harvey out there to see if he can be that, because what they gave up to get Harvey, it was a lot. And so that's probably what we're going to see. Is that the right answer? I don't think it is, but I think it could work. I just haven't seen that from Harvey yet this year. I think he's been a little shaky for me to be comfortable running him out there in the ninth. But we got time. This is what we love, right? We got time. And the Royals have got to get there. Maybe Lugo will just go nine innings for him tonight. How about that? Or maybe the Royals' offense will explode and they'll have a 12-run lead going into the eighth inning. And maybe none of it will matter. But that game you'll hear right here on KFH. It will be pregame coverage beginning again at 7:10 first pitch. So stay tuned for that. When we come back, Brandon Ayuk, the curious case of a very talented receiver, he might get traded. What impact would that have on the Chiefs? Yeah, I think it could. I think it could. We'll talk about that next on Sports Daily. It's all Brockton Caster. Don't go away.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, alongside you, Jad Chambers, manning that IHOP hotline for us, 869-1240. Still maybe a couple minutes if you want to try to get in. You can also leave us your comments on our video streams. And thanks to those watching us on 12 News Connected. Brandon Ayuk has been asking for a trade for a while, Tommy. Sounds like he's going to get his wish. The Niners don't want to pay him. I get it. They're already paying Debo. It's going to be tough. They got to pay Brock Purdy. Like, I get it. And I think Brandon Ayuk's really, really good, by the way. The problem that I think everyone is having is they would like to get a nice return. It's sort of like Tyreek Hill, right? You have to find a trade partner, but that trade partner has to be willing to give the big contracts. So you almost have to negotiate the contract before you execute the trade, and then you got to agree with the package. It sounds like in the reporting yesterday that the two teams interested in that would be Cleveland and New England, both losses to me for Brandon Ayuk. I think they're downgrades at quarterback, downgrades offensively for Brandon Ayuk. So he's got to then decide, okay, am I willing to go to one of those places and play with a quarterback who's not quite as established in an offense that's certainly not as established? I don't know which of those two I would prefer if I was Brandon Ayuk, honestly. But, you know, it comes down to that and if they can get the package. So when I say what does it mean for the Chiefs, I think twofold. Would Brandon Ayuk going to the Browns or Patriots impact in the AFC anything that you would expect from the Chiefs? I would say, no, it would not. Not even close. But yeah, no, him leaving the 49ers, because the 49ers, remember, have been the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl, not the Chiefs. Would it impact that? I would say, yes, it would. And so this is a good thing for the Chiefs, because if the Niners lose Ayuk, which, yeah, I know they drafted Pearsall in the first round, and they still have a ton of talent on offense, that's got to be a win for the Chiefs. If that's the team Vegas is saying is the best chance to beat them in a Super Bowl, them losing a player of that caliber. By the way, 1,300 yards last year and 7 touchdowns, if you don't believe me, I'd say that's a win for the Chiefs for sure.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think that really knowing that, you know, you've got a downgrade now with not only where Brandon Ayuk is going, but one less target for Brock Purdy in San Francisco, I do think that that benefits everybody who's competing for a Super Bowl this season. I think it directly, for the most part, impacts the challengers in the NFC. There's no doubt about that. You know, because we've always known how loaded the 49ers offense has been as far as their weapons are concerned. And now you don't have to worry about Ayuk as much. There's still a tremendous amount of talent, don't get me wrong, with McCaffrey and Debo and George Kittle and, you know, et cetera. But Brandon Ayuk is, I think, the guy in San Francisco that, while he's not the flashiest out of everybody that they have, he's all reliable, I think. And
he's really
so,
good.
You know, he's great, but I think that it's interesting how he got, I think, a little overshadowed in San Francisco because of the
less consistent than Debo. Debo probably is more impactful when he's on the field.
But Debo's got a different role than Ayuk does, where
totally
Debo can
different
impact
role.
The game in a yeah. variety of different ways, where Ayuk is more of your traditional
but
receiver.
Look, if I'm San Francisco and you're telling me I've got to pick, let's call it 3 out of 4 or 2 out of 3, they paid Kittle, they paid CMC, they paid Debo. I mean, I'm not going to say it's egregious that they that Ayuk was the guy left out in that. I don't think it is. I think all those other guys, you can justify it. I will say, too, they made it very clear how this was probably going when they drafted Pearsall in the first round. Yeah. When they did that, everyone's like, well, they don't, why do they need another
receiver?
Well,
that was an insurance policy.
This is why.
It was an insurance policy. I mean,
yeah.
Ayuk had been pretty clear on his desire to
absolutely
either
for a
get paid
now.
Or to move to another team. I think that for the Browns, yeah, like you now have a fairly reliable and really talented target in Ayuk that I think can help Deshaun Watson.
They already have Cooper. It's the Patriots that need to make the move to help Drake May, to me.
Yeah, but my point is that I think that this helps the Browns probably more than it helps the Patriots, in my opinion, because it's another really talented receiver that can help kind of shore up some of the gaps that Deshaun Watson probably has in his game. Meanwhile, with New England, I think that it's a better long-term fit for Ayuk because Drake May will need a little bit of time to get into his own, but once he does, then they can certainly build, you know, something special between May and Ayuk if he ends up there. So I think that there are pros and cons to both potential landing places. I think that Ayuk, yeah, you're leaving a team filled with superstars. You're going to a worse team, so it's a downgrade there. But you probably have more of an opportunity to shine in either Cleveland or New England.
Watson sucks. Go to the Patriots. Help Drake May. 869-1240, that's the number. We'll come back. We'll put a bow on it next.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.